thing that's really interesting in the Bible is that a lot of people in the Bible go through name changes. This is an old tradition. When there's a great change in someone's relationship with God, when they kind of move to a new level in their relationship with God, their name gets changed. Can you think of any in the Bible that jumps to mind?
Abraham.
Abram becomes Abraham.
Saul.
Saul becomes Paul.
Sarah.
Sarah becomes Sarah.
Simon
becomes Peter. Cephas. Rock. Is all that
Jacob?
Jacob becomes Israel. There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them. So it makes sense that when a man becomes Pope, he takes on a new name. And that new name identifies the tradition that that person, that man, sees himself in, where he will fit in the history of continuity and tradition. It reflects their personal spirituality as well as sending a political message. So now we've got Jorge Mario Bergoglio becomes Pope Francis. What's the big deal? You've heard it ad nauseum probably this week. Actually, I was on the plane from LA to Boston when all this was breaking, and I'd never been on a plane yet before where you could watch cable TV in real time. It was really weird. It's very strange. But big deal, because it's never been done before. And something that's never been done before, they don't have a church that is big news. So I was curious. Brief list of the most popular people names. Amazing what you can find on the internet. John's been used 23 times. Benedict 16, Gregory 16, Clement 14, Leo 13, even Pius gets 12. Boniface gets 9, and there are others. So there's plenty of pressure to go with the flow and fit in a particular tradition. There are a couple of names that have been unique in papal history, and there's a reason why. These are one-timers. Tellus Zephorus, Eleutherius, Zephyrinus, Malachianes, Zosimus, these are all really, really old ones. Simplicius, these are all before 1000, you can see. Never chosen before, probably never known yet, because who could say that? For those of us that are not steeped in the Roman Catholic tradition, we're like, well, who's Francis? So I actually don't want to talk about the Pope's words, but I do want to talk about Francis and what he teaches us about God and what he teaches us about how we can live out our lives in Christ. And there is a reason why the Pope chose this name, and I love it because we throw all kinds of things on it that he probably never even thought of, perhaps. But Francis does take us to a place that can challenge us in our relationship. So what do you know? What do you know about St. Francis? It's funny to do Francis on Patrick's Day, but you'll have to share. What do you know about St. Francis?
He's from Assisi.
What did you say?
He was from Assisi, Italy.
He was from Italy? About Assisi.
The birds and the flowers.
The birds and the flowers, right? When it was the statue of him in your garden.
Love the poor.
Love the poor.
Renounce wealth.
Renounce wealth.
Champion of peace.
Champion of peace, okay. This is pretty good. Don't you trust?
Ripped his clothes off.
Well, actually, the tradition I think was he just stripped down right naked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rhonda Mahad Lee did some work. She was down in Durham, North Carolina. She did some work on Francis. She did a couple things. One in the 12th century Italy, everybody thought he was crazy because in his 20s he stripped naked in the town square to renounce his wealth from his parents. His parents were there, the bishop, the entire population of Assisi. He kissed and hugged lepers. He preached to the birds. That's what I came from. Not only did he love the birds, he would actually share the gospel with the birds. And he called them his little sisters. He remarked that they need more attention than most people. He founded an order grounded in the belief that Jesus' disciples could live the way their Lord did, owning nothing, begging for what they needed, trusting God to provide for them the way God provides for the lilies of the field. And it was interesting because people who had more possessions than Francis thought that Francis was crazy because he would make no distinguishing between the deserving poor and the undeserving poor. Does that sound familiar? If someone asked him for something, he gave it to them. He didn't give them through this litany of what they were going to use the money for, whether they were worthy, whether they were the hardworking poor or the lazy poor. He just gave it to them. And then the people who were rich, they thought he was crazy. Then the people who resented the rich thought he was crazy because he never condemned the rich. He wouldn't condemn the selfishness or the wealth or the possession of the rich. He just asked them, the wealthy, to open their hearts and to answer the Spirit's call as their conscience dictated. So everybody kind of thought he lost his mind. And Francis did not argue with them. He openly admitted, I am a fool. I am a fool for Christ. And he would always say he was foolish enough to believe that Jesus actually meant it when he said his disciples should live in a life of radical love. That life that Jesus showed in stripping down and washing his disciples' feet. And he said, yes, I am your master, but I am your servant, and you go and do likewise. Francis dared to think that Jesus actually meant it. When Jesus said, sell what you own and give your money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, then follow me, he actually meant it. When Jesus said, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, then Jesus actually meant it. When Jesus said, give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again, he actually meant it. And if Jesus said, if your brother or sister sins against you, forgive them, not seven times, but 77 times, Jesus actually meant it. Now, for 2,000 years, scholars have labored endlessly to explain away these teachings and make them more palatable to us. We have made them metaphors and similes and images and analogies, and Francis said, no, he really meant it. Francis was not a scholar, and so he felt no responsibility to tame down these kind of radical declarations of Jesus. But he led his life embodied that. And one of the things that Francis was about breaking down walls and breaking down barriers. Francis called his friend, like when he was putting his order together, he said, stop trusting walls, the physical walls, the emotional walls that keep us safe. And instead, Francis's life and his teachings invited people into kind of a holy adventure to radically entrust yourself to Jesus Christ, to the one who entered this world as a helpless infant, who relies in the dark on the generosity of friends and strangers who never owned a thing, who suffered torture, who was publicly executed, and who rose again as the Lord of all creation. That was the Jesus. And then on his deathbed, Francis offered this final prayer. He said, I have done what is mine. May Christ teach you what is yours to do. Now, Francis challenges me in ways that I am not comfortable. Because he puts his thumb on some things that we have world away and somehow managed to make work with our spirituality and this figure from the tall center says, wait, wait a minute, get away there. There's a lot of things that I'm learning from Francis listening to all this kind of speculation. But there's three things in particular I was going to highlight for you to ponder in your own life and walk with God. One is, what is the source of your security? What is the source of your security? For Francis, his security was in Jesus Christ. He gave up everything. And so I ask myself, what am I holding on to so tightly these days that gives me a false sense of security? My wealth? My standing in the community? My possessions? There are all kinds of things that I wrap around myself to give myself a sense of security in this world. All of them can disappear like that. The bottle can dry out. I'm going to be accused of something horrific. Didn't matter whether I was guilty or not. I'd be done. What's hard for us, particularly us here in America, we don't need to trust in God so much. Because we can handle most of life's challenges without it. We have money. We have health insurance, most of us. We have a job or a pension. We have family. We have friends. But it can all go. And if it were all to disappear, would what you have? true source of your security. Cash. Second one is, what is the source of your joy? Does it come from your possessions? Does it come from the opinions of other people? Where does your joy come from, and how secure is your joy? Francis was known as being joyful. You know that statue you see out in the garden with the birds on his ear holding them? There's joy there. Francis' joy came from the sure knowledge that he was a child of God. Because he had stripped himself of everything and given away everything, he was truly like a child, dependent on God for everything. And he could trust his God, his Father, to take care of him. So what's the source of your joy? Now, it's important to separate joy and happiness. Happiness is an emotion. It comes and it goes. Matter of fact, I don't know about you, but I'll wake up some days and I'm just unhappy. And I'm in a foul mood and I have no idea why. It used to really bother me. It used to really worry about that. Oh gosh, maybe I'm getting depressed. Maybe, you know, who knows? Like, why did I get up on the rug? Why am I just down? Why do I just feel heavy? I mean, I just need to ignore that, then don't feed it, and then it will eventually go away. Maybe some of you are never prone to that, but I get like that. And that's an emotion. That comes and goes. That's happiness. Joy is something different. Joy is an attitude. Joy is a way of looking at life. For me, joy is knowing who God is and who I am in God. Joy is not fleeting. It is grounded in reality. So what is the source of your joy? And does it come in God? And how do you learn the difference between joy and happiness? It's pretty key. Pretty key for Francis. And then the last one, which I think is really powerful, is what is the source of your love? What is the source of your love? Francis was best known as the lover of God's creation. He's the patron saint of animals. He's the patron saint of creation and ecology. He has his own feast day in the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, the Lutheran Church, October 4th. And if you've ever been in any of those kind of communions, that's often the day when you can come bring your animals to get blessed. Has anybody ever been to the blessing of the animals? We've adopted it with the blessing of the steeds, but it's really something when people bring their cats and dogs to church. It's really pretty exciting. He believed that God loved all his creation. And Francis was always kind of unwilling to make human beings, while in the image of God, somehow superior in that sense. So that's what he believed. Francis once said that he considered himself no friend of Christ if he did not cherish those for whom Christ died. His love, the source of his love, came through Jesus. I want to give you this one final story, because you probably didn't get this in CNN and Fox News and whatever else you've been watching to listen to my love for Francis. In 1219, part of the Crusades, Francis went to the Holy Land to preach to the Muslim people. He was actually given a pass to get behind enemy lines to preach the good news. And he went to the Sultan at that time, Malek al-Khamil, and he proclaimed the gospel and the love of Jesus Christ to the Sultan, who very politely replied that he had his own beliefs, thank you very much, and that Muslims are firmly convinced of the truth of Islam as much as Francis was convinced of the truth of Christianity. So Francis proposed in the biblical tradition that a fire be made, and that he and a Muslim volunteer would both walk into the fire and side by side to show whose faith was stronger. The Sultan said he was not sure that a Muslim volunteer would be found. Francis then offered to walk into the fire alone. Now, Francis was not doing this just like to be a blower. I mean, he was doing it because he really loved, had a great love for these people with whom he was sharing the gospel. Anyway, I don't believe that he did walk into the fire. The Sultan was very impressed by remaining unconverted. Francis even proposed an armistice, a peace treaty, that's just a peace between the Christianity and the Muslims over the Holy Land, and he drew up terms. The Sultan actually agreed. He went back to the Christian leaders who rejected it. Check that out. Francis then returned to Italy, but after the fall of the Crusader Kingdom, and by the way, the Muslims then were in charge of the Holy Land. Fascinating thing, how love kind of love came from Jesus Christ. It wasn't like this kind of affection. It was a true love that came from it. I want to leave you with this kind of image. This is something I found recently, thinking of that first John passage that Lisa read, from Carlo Carletto in his book, In Search of the Beyond. He's talking about the source of our love. Where does our love and our ability to love come from? And what is it grounded in? And he said, let's have three premises. First, there's people who do not love. And they feel superior to everyone else. And I don't probably think there's probably many of those in this room. But you've met people. They don't love people. And they feel they're kind of arrogant. Because they really feel like they're superior to everybody else. The movers and shakers. And then there are those who love. And they love, and in their loving, they feel equal to everyone else. That's it for a minute. In their loving, they feel equal and a share with everyone else. And then there are those who love much and gladly take the lower. Those who love much gladly take the lower place. That's the love of humility. That's the love that Jesus was actually showing when he washed the disciples' feet. I'm going to make myself lower than you, even have love for you. So those who don't love, those who love equally, and those who love much and are willing to take a lower place. There's a spectrum there. Do you see it? And each of us can identify ourselves somewhere along that spectrum. And that comprises the degrees of the spiritual life here on earth. This is what Carlo says, which is fascinating. For those who do not love, death. Spiritual death. There's no life for those who love. For those who love, life. Sounds good, right? For those who love, life. For those who love much, holiness. Think about that for a while. Death for those who do not love, life for those who love, holiness for those who love much. And it is in this beatitude that Jesus himself lived to the full, stooping out of love to the lowest place, even to the extent of being rejected as a criminal, fit only to be hung on the cross. So I finally ask you, what is the source of your love? Are you willing to love as Jesus loved, or only as much as your little heart can love? And what would have to happen in your life for you to desire to follow Jesus Christ and live that radical kind of love? So, plenty to think about, friends. What is your source of security, your source of joy, and your source of love? And knowing a little bit more about Francis, would you ever dare to call yourself Francis? Do you join me in prayer?